today is Thursday, August 26th, and this is an oral history interview with Keith and Nancy Green. And I'm going to start with Keith this morning. So, you know, when we left off, you were telling me and Don, and I couldn't get a hold of Don this morning, so he may be out of town, that you were working, 89 to 92 in Iowa, does that sound right? Mm-hmm. Okay, and then we had, Prescott and Walnut Canyon basically 86 to 89, and then you were offered a regular ranger position, right, in Iowa at the Herbert Hoover house.
Permanent position.
And that was like a full-time thing, right?
Right.
Okay. And so what we, you know, kind of skipped over, and I don't know how much time we have to talk about it, was, you know, like 77, 78, and 79, you were still down at Phantom Ranch.
I was down at Phantom, right.
And you were there still seasonally then, right? Like mainly summers, or were you there longer than that?
No, that was, you know, that was working for Fred Harvey, interim wage. So I think I, what year was it? 77, I believe. How'd that go? When was that? No, well, that was 67.
Yeah, I can tell you that you told me.
I got 67 and 77 mixed up.
Yeah, we had gone, you know, we were up into the 80s, know, when you were in Flagstaff and blah, 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 and, living on Grand Canyon Avenue. But back in 76, Terry Mache was the manager down at Phantom, and you, at that point, and then like the next year would be 77, so were you both working for Fred Harvey?
No.
Aww.
No.
Hi.
Just me. Nancy was always a teacher.
Oh, okay, yeah, right. I don't know why I said, were you both working for Fred Harvey? I mean, I guess I meant Terry and you. The manager worked for Fred Harvey what months were you down there? Like,
I was there most of the year, so it was probably all year round.
Okay.
And there was one year there when I went hitchhiking, but I think that was before Phantom Ranch. So,
okay.
So, yeah, I think I pretty much was there all the time.
Okay. Come here, Flora. Come here. And then, so what were your duties during that time, 77 to 79?
Well,
when you were down there year-round.
Because of my vision, when I first got, because my vision, when I first got hired, that would have been in 75, the manager didn't feel like it was safe for me to do anything other than be a laundry person.
Okay.
And so that was the first year, 75 and 76, and then Terry became
Kevin, they're spaniel. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, I love you.
Oh, we're recording.
You're being recorded.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm so sorry, babies. I'm so sorry.
Okay.
But anyway, then Terry Mache was manager.
Okay.
And she decided I could do everything anybody else did. So.
And she helped you get into the kitchen, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but I, you know, so I was sometimes a waiter and sometimes cabin cleaner, and sometimes a bed maker, and sometimes, sometimes the lodge person, which, you know, is clean mopping the floors and doing the dishes and that sort of thing.
And was there, was there a ranger, official ranger down there at all times, like during those years, 77, 78, 79? I mean, I know that you got into the whole Phantom Ranch history thing at some point, but I didn't know if during those late 70 years, if you were doing any of the ranger, I mean, just any of the kind of history talks to people or anything. Were you not at that point yet, huh?
No, this was...
earlier.
Yeah, before that.
Do you remember...
There was a permanent ranger down there, of course.
Yeah, do you remember who that was back in the late 70s?
Well, it was Phil Hecker to begin with. I can't remember the other names, but, and they tended to change, too,
okay,
all the time, you know, whoever was the permanent ranger down there.
And did the permanent rangers, would they be like you in terms of staying, and Terry, were they down there year-round?
No, they, generally had, well, I'm not exactly sure, because of course I wasn't working for the Park Service then, but I'm thinking Bouchard, but that's not his name. The rangers would be more or less permanently set down there, but often they would substitute with another ranger, and so and then we also had a number of seasonals down there then,
okay,
too, other volunteers. That's when Wayne Ranney was first down there.
Okay, what was he doing down there?
He was, I think, I believe he was, what did they call those? It was kind of a volunteer position, but he got paid something for it, but not much.
Was he doing like his interpretive geology stuff, or was he actually working at Phantom Ranch more for Fred Harvey?
No, he was working for the Park Service.
Okay.
So,
I wonder if he had finished his PhD at that point.
Huh?
I wonder if he has a PhD, I believe, right?
He does now, yeah.
And I don't know if he had finished it by, 77 to 79.
No. In fact, he wasn't even in school then.
Okay, so he had, he was young then.
Oh, yeah. We all were.
yeah. I'm trying to think. I mean, Wayne must be about, 66 maybe now?
Probably.
Yeah. I think he might be just a tiny bit older than me, because he didn't get his knees done, I don't think, until he went on Medicare, which was last year.
Oh,
so that makes
him
about 66.
Yeah.
Which means 77 to 79, you'd think he would at least have finished undergraduate school at that point.
He may have.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he wasn't on any, I mean, the kinds of things that he'd do would be checking the campground, you know, make sure everybody has permits and hiking the trails and, you know, seeing if there's people hiking, camping illegally and that sort of thing.
That might have been what...
And doing odd jobs for the Park Service, you know.
Yeah.
There's lots of stuff there.
What about like the search and rescue people? Were they?
Yeah, that would be one of his jobs.
Okay. Do those people stay down at Phantom, or do they bring them down when they need them?
They just bring them down when they need them. Yeah, that's a special crew on the rim. that was, you know, either north or south or Inner Canyon or whatever.
What about the trail maintenance people? Are they just like seasonal people that come in the summer or something?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, yeah. So what else, what can you remember about Phil Hecker or anybody else from those late 70 years when you were down there pretty much full time?
Well, Phil Hecker was a cowboy ranger. You know, he was a ranger, but he's a cowboy too.
Okay.
I mean, he wore
cowboy hats and all that.
A cowboy hat, not a ranger hat.
Was he?
And always, you know, always wore jeans, you know, when wearing shorts or anything like that. And he had a horse.
Oh, wow.
Which, horse's name, I don't remember, but he would ride that horse over to Clear Creek occasionally and, you know, just patrolling the trails.
You'll have to, you know, since I'm not, like Don, very as familiar with, you know, the trails and whatnot, like, how far is Clear Creek from Phantom Ranch, and like, how do you get there?
I believe it was 8 miles. 8 miles over to Clear Creek, and you go north on the North Kaibab about half a mile, and then it splits off and switches back up to up onto the cliff on the east side of. On the east side of Bright Angel Canyon.
Okay.
Up to, there's a really neat overlook, you know, looking right down on Phantom Ranch.
Wow.
And then another one looking down on the river where you're looking at the bridge and all. And then it keeps switchbacking up under the Tapeats Formation, and it kind of flattens out and goes eastward, or goes along the Tapeats anyway,
mm-hmm.
zigzags in and out, of course, until it comes to a place where it switchbacks up the hill, up through the Tapeats Formation, onto the Tonneau platform on the side, and then it stays on the platform and switch, you know, zigzags back and forth. It was by Sumner Butte. And
do people normally not ride horses on that?
No.
They would hike.
People would hike on that, yeah.
And then is that a place that you would have to get like a backcountry permit to camp?
Yes.
Okay, but it's probably a really nice camp area if you can look down.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's just the trail. I haven't even gotten you to Clear Creek.
Oh, yet. Okay. This is just the trail to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. It goes around Sumner Butte and then Zoroaster.
Okay.
Temple is way up above you, and it goes around that. And then it switchbacks down in the next, on the other side of Zoroaster Temple is Clear Creek coming down off the north, from the north anyway, and that that goes down through, I think it's the Hakatai Shale. I'm not sure what it is, but it's gravel. The trail goes down. It goes down, and it's only about maybe 6 inches wide, 8 inches wide.
Wow.
And it's gravel, so of course it's all falling away on one side and falling down on the other.
That's a little scary.
I know. I couldn't believe he'd go on a horse with a horse on,
right.
on that.
He must have been a pretty accomplished horseback rider.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Exactly.
And he trusted it.
It comes down, eventually he gets down to the level of the creek and of Clear Creek, and was there a picnic table? I think there was a picnic table there. I'm not sure about that, but anyway, it's right next to the creek, from there you can walk. I mean, there's no trails or anything once you get to Third Creek. So you can walk up the creek. There's some really beautiful waterfalls up one canyon, and then another canyon would take you that way. There's Shabba Falls.
Does that fall run always, or is it
no,
a seasonal?
It's a seasonal fall. It's a seasonal thing, but it's really beautiful when it flows. I remember one time I hiked over there, and the second canyon to the right, and then the first canyon to the left, or something like that. But anyway, Shabba Falls is this cave in the red wall.
Okay.
Way up above you. And so,
Is it a cave you think that natives used to live in? Native Americans, or just a naturally forming?
I don't think so. I don't think they could have.
Because it was way up there?
Well, yeah, and there's water coming gushing out.
Oh, okay, I got it. Water comes out of the cave.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, I remember one night I slept, I threw out my sleeping pad and backpack, I mean, and I don't know, sleeping bag, I suppose, and down on the floor of that canyon, which was dry. There was no water running down it, but way, way up above you, I could see Shabba Falls, and it just happened to be a full moon night.
Uh-huh.
And so, especially as the moon came over the canyon, it showed more and more of the falls were in the moonlight.
Oh,
so all night long,
beautiful.
It was quite beautiful.
Wow. Did you do a lot of these hikes to places like that on your own, or were you with other people that were working at BAMF?
I usually did with somebody. I did a few by myself, but not very many.
Okay.
I could get over to, I could do that. I think I did do that on my own.
And that, you said that was 8 miles, right?
Yeah,
one way.
Yeah.
So that's quite a hike there.
Yeah.
And you probably knew from living down there a lot of the hikes out of Banff, right? I mean, any way you could go from that spot. And you guys could also, when you got together with Nancy, you could pick up river trips. I don't know if you did that. You did that before Nancy, too, right?
Before Nancy, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And before she was doing Ezra.
Yeah. So what else can you remember about your time down there in the late 70s? 76, say, to 79? People
well,
you
was,
knew. And
those were really fun years. And the Park Service had not cracked down like they have now, anyway. So it was really quite open and free. And it was, the 70s, which was,
right,
an open and free time for young people all over the country. So there was,
the war was ending, and they hadn't become like real hardcore conservative, the Park Service, yet.
Right. Yeah, the Park Service was pretty laissez-faire, whatever, even if you were breaking the rules, it was kind of funny, rather than, oh my God, I'll throw you in jail.
You didn't have to worry so much about going to jail.
No, not at all. Not at all. So, anyway, because of that, there were some pretty funny things. Like, you know, one of the jobs was being a bed maker. You were a bed maker, and then after you finished the beds, then one person became, no, how'd that work? Anyway, after you finished the beds, you could take a break. But anyway, we fashioned these holsters into our belts.
Uh-huh.
That could hold a beer can.
Okay, and you could have that with you while you were making the beds?
Yeah, we drank beers while we made the beds.
Okay.
And then, you know, usually we'd get around to the first set, you know, and then up to, how'd that work? Everything except the dorms. The dorms all have 10 beds in them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, making those takes a while.
You had to kind of get around these bunk beds, right? There were bunk beds and all that.
Mm-hmm. So we'd take a break before we did the dorms, which meant we'd go down to the creek and take off our clothes and get in the creek, and maybe somebody had some pot that we could smoke and, you know, relax a little bit, and then we'd go back up and make the rest of the beds. It was quite fun.
Sounds like fun. I was going to introduce Flora to Nancy. She's a good girl. Yeah. She loves to be held, but I don't know if you are up for holding dogs. You want to try? She likes to sit on laps. Tell me if it hurts, though.
Where'd you get him?
You might lick your
she
face,
came
too.
From Phoenix. Hey, Flora, this is Nancy.
I have a Cavapoo. So the mom's a Cavalier Spaniel, and the
ask her for a kiss.
Can I have a kiss?
Flora, give her a kiss. Give her a kiss.
Oh.
She's so cute. She's tiny.
Yeah, she's small. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I can hold her, Nancy. You don't have to hold her unless you want to. Yeah, she's kind of, she's 10
so
pounds.
I didn't see
you okay, so you guys, after you'd get done making those bunk beds, then you take a break, take your clothes off, go smoke some pot and relax a little.
Play in the creek, right? Cool off. And then, you know, so we had parties that were kind of reunions, but, you know, of people from the rim, you know, that had worked at Phantom. And, but they were just wild because there was drugs around too. So, and I think that occasionally the drugs were things like speed, you know, which gives everybody extra energy, which is not a good thing at a party.
But would they end up going for massive hikes or doing crazy things?
No, they end up, well, I remember, you know, at one point there was one guy anyway was up on the roof over the door that comes in.
Okay.
And he'd gotten a bunch of buckets of water.
Okay.
And it was mostly big, massive water fights. Now, remember, it's hot down there, so water fights are really,
oh yeah,
obviously a fun thing to do. So he would, like, you know, because nobody was looking over the door up on the roof, and he'd douse everybody with water as
they
came in.
Oh boy! I bet they didn't like it initially, but then were pretty grateful if they were wet.
Well, it just, you know, eventually the fire hose would be brought out and hooked up, and and people would, or employees would throw open the door and run in and come into the lodge with a fire hose.
Oh, Lord.
And there's just water everywhere. I mean, I remember like 6 inches of water.
Oh, my God.
Floor of the lodge.
Did anybody get into trouble?
No.
Good.
No, nobody got in trouble. But it was just insane, you know. It was actually, for me, it was a little too wild, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, especially the food fights and, you know, I can't, you know, it's so hard to get food down there anyway.
Right.
I hated to see that happen so
Okay,
much.
When would they get into these food fights?
Oh, and part of the party, you know, you never knew what was going to happen because everybody's just wild, you know.
And these were people who were attending these parties for people who worked down there mainly?
Yeah, mostly.
Okay.
And
do you remember any of the names of the wilder people?
They didn't have the water fights and stuff until after the lodge closed, so this was all going on at night.
Okay, I gotcha.
So, but yeah, well, there were
the name
four or five.
Dilty, this one, or the name of who he's talking about?
Yeah.
What was the? She's trying to tell me the name of somebody who was involved in that. Was it? What did you say, Dilty?
I don't know.
No.
No, she wouldn't. Oh, she's asking.
Oh, well, I don't know. There's all kind of, a lot of people involved.
And this is
I can't really name names.
Yeah, and you didn't, Nancy. You didn't know at that point.
Right.
Yeah, this is all pre-Nancy.
Right.
Okay. So now we know that there was water fights. There was water in the lodge, 6 inches sometimes, after the lodge was closed.
Yeah.
And lots of cooling off in the creek. And whatever drugs it sounds like people could get down there.
Yeah, and there were psychedelics too. So, you know, some people were tripping on acid and other things. I mean, you know, the rangers were, you know, you couldn't be too wild, and every once in a while, there'd be a raid kind of planned by the Park Service.
Oh.
But we all knew about them somehow before they happened.
So you can get rid of whatever could be a problem.
Well, you just have to hide it someplace.
Right.
I mean, there's plenty of places to put it, just under a rock or whatever.
Right, right.
You know, they're not going to look under all the rocks.
No. Was there a lot of, like, would you say there was animosity between the regular rangers and the employees? Or did you guys, was there friendships or was there both, you know?
There was both, but generally I would say there was animosity because the Park Service was the law, you know.
And right.
We were doing whatever we, you know, living life to its fullest.
Right, and
in
they
our
were
opinion.
More, they were very serious about their career track
some of them,
thing.
Some of them never even broke a smile, I swear. They just, you know. Well, one thing that we used to do.
There's coffee in the coffee maker? Okay.
One thing that we used to do is, which was fun, is the rangers would come in, you know, would maybe come in during beer hall. They'd come in just to come and check it out, you know, they're all in their uniform and stuff. They come, you know, say hello to everybody on the way through and go into the beer hall, the front room, the dining room, or the front room, yeah, the dining room, and and talk to the visitors and stuff like that. But they often they come in the back door, and they and that was back when we used to all after dinner just to all stay in the lodge
mm-hmm.
and hang around the employee cap the employee
do you want me to heat it up?
Dining room. There's a table and a kind of a wagon wheel chandelier hanging over it, and that was where the employees
used to hang out. Okay.
And we drink beer. Beer was 50 cents a piece, but there's a beer bucket. And you had to, you're supposed to, if you reached into the refrigerator and got a beer, you're supposed to put 50 cents in the beer bucket. But, you know, after a few beers, you started, okay, well, next time I just have a dollar, so next beer, maybe I'll just put a dollar in. But, you know, it just kind of goes by, and you, the next morning you go, oh, shoot, I didn't pay for any of those beers.
Oh.
And so the beer bucket was always really short. But, oh, anyway, what I started to tell about the Rangers. The Rangers, anyway, would come in, and we had this game that we'd play kind of. It was pretty funny. They'd put their flashlights on the table that we were all sitting around and go on into the other room, you know, because they didn't want to carry their flashlights because they were in, you know, bright under lights and stuff. So they'd leave their flashlights. And what we would do is we'd unscrew the flashlights and take the batteries out of the flashlight.
Diffuser?
And put a weenie in the flashlight.
Nebulizer, I mean.
And we called a weenie, you know, weenie in the flashlight.
Those little hot dog things.
Yeah, yeah. Because we used to sell hot dogs back then.
Okay.
And so anyway, we just put the weenie in there and
then
screw
it
back
up
so, you know, they didn't know. And usually what would happen then is the Rangers would finish, you know, talking to people, and they come back out and say goodbye and grab their flashlight and walk out and through the lit part of the ranch, the main part of it has floodlights over it.
So
they walk through that, and then they get into the darkness
on
the other side and pull out their flashlight and turn it on. Of course, nothing happens.
Oh no!
And then they stick their finger in there where the battery should be and hit the weenie.
Oh, but they love that.
I've been weenied.
Oh no!
So that's one of the things we used to do.
Were the Rangers? Would you say they were about your age or older?
They were generally older, but not a lot of.
Oh,
older.
She sees a stuffed animal. Can I show her a stuffed animal?
Okay. Make sure it doesn't beat her up.
Here it is, Laura. See, not real.
That's
so
funny.
Go ahead.
So anyway, there were that kind of things going on, which was pretty fun. Funny. Every once in a while we'd make pot brownies, and we had there's a flagpole outside the lodge.
Uh-huh.
And when we made pot brownies, we had a flag that had a skull and crossbones on it.
Okay.
And we put that up under the American flag.
Okay.
And that meant we had pot brownies.
So they knew, the other employees knew they should come on in and have a brownie.
Right. But sometimes we didn't, you know, sometimes we just made, you know, the cook made brownies, and they weren't pot brownies, and that was pretty funny because I guess rumor had been circulating amongst the cowboys that we made pot brownies down there. And so one time we made just regular brownies, and the Wranglers came in and they saw the plate of brownies and pot brownies, and they went and they ate them thinking they're all going to get high, and they did get high, but I don't know what they got high on, because they just got high because they thought they were eating. And you know, they were Wranglers, so for them getting high was getting drunk. So.
Right.
So it was, I mean, they were like, "Oh, I really screwed up, blah, blah, blah."
But they really were. They were only in their own mind.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, there's all kinds of stories from that period of time. The ringtail cats had invaded the lodge.
Okay.
They had been and probably still are living above the actual lodge. The way the lodge is made, it has stone walls. The walls are all made of stone.
Okay.
Up to about maybe 8.5 feet high, and then there's just a ceiling that's on top of it. I've never been up there, but I'm guessing it's something like a plywood ceiling or something, and then above that there's a wooden gabled roof.
Okay.
And
when was that original stone building built, do you know?
In 2022 to 2023.
Wow, old.
Yeah. Well, that was the very beginning of Phantom Ranch. So,
okay.
So anyway, ringtails have, you know, really big, really strong claws, and plus they can balance with the long tail, you know. So they would climb up the rock walls quite easily. And then there wasn't much to keep them from getting under the roof, but still on top of the ceiling.
Okay, gotcha.
You know what I mean? So yeah. There's that attic
space. They were in
space.
Between the roof and the top of the wall.
Yeah, there's that attic space right up there. And then every night, they'd come down, because there were certain places where, well, like I know where the above the grill there were pipes that went up, and I think carrying wires that went up to the fans, the exhaust fans up
mm-hmm.
there. But anyway, when they went through the roof, they made a hole in the ceiling, but much bigger than it needed to be for just the wires that were putting up there. So it made a space for the ringtails to climb down the...
Okay, so they could actually
get into the building.
Wow.
Yeah. And so we had to, always had to hide all the candy bars, because they'd hit the candy bars. And, you know, if you forgot to do that when you closed the lodge, then you found candy wrappers all over the floor.
They'd eat them and then they'd go back up the way they came?
Yeah.
Got out that way?
Yeah, yeah. So, anyway, they were kind of and then, of course, there were walls in the inside walls that were kind of a, I don't know, it's kind of like a dartboard sort of on either side of a 6-inch thick wall, and they'd get in that space too.
And just so be inside the walls, kind of.
Inside the walls, yeah, they were all over the place.
Did they ever get stuck in there, or could they get out usually?
Well, they always could get out, except there was one time when,
She's licking it to death.
I think I was either the waiter or the cook. I don't know. I must have been the cook, because I walked into the lodge, and of course it's all hot in there, and the first thing you do is switch on the...
Let me ask Nancy, can she play with this?
Oh, no.
She likes it.
You think she's not here?
She's licking it.
As long as she doesn't tear it up.
No, she doesn't ever rip anything up, but she'll lick it, though.
Okay.
There she goes, licking.
So anyway, so I switched on the swamp cooler, first thing walked into the lodge, and there was this, all this dirt came flying out of the register of the swamp cooler, and dirt, and bam, 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 bam,
ooh.
Like, holy shit, what is that? And so I turned it back off, and of course I had to go cook and stuff, and we finally, there were enough employees up to go explore what was going on, and they opened the walls of a swamp
right,
cooler.
Right.
They opened the walls, and this poor ringtail cat jumped out of it.
Oh no!
Who had apparently gotten in through the the register. In through the register and was apparently making a home on top of the roller thing, you know, the fan. So when it turned the fan on, of course it went wham, 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 wham.
Oh God, did it kill it?
No, it jumped out, but both of its hind legs were numb, so it couldn't move its hind legs, but still, it was still able to climb up the wall. Just with its front legs, climb up the wall and go into the attic. So, and it was seen every once in a while since then. And apparently, it got use of one leg, but the other one was still
not
just
right.
Dangling. Yeah, for a while anyway. So.
But you think it survived, though.
It survived it, yeah.
Wow.
There was a Halloween party, I think. I know this name, Brian. And he was this big, tall, lanky guy. Gay guy. Was one of the first employees when I first started working down there. And he and Terry Soler, I think, were dancing in the dining room, and it was closed, so it must have been a party.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Halloween party. Which are really crazy down there, but anyway, it was a Halloween party, and he was dancing, and he was going to show her how to do the not the waltz, but the polka, how to do the polka, and so you know, there's that kick when you do the polka. And he did the kick, and he kicked right through the wall.
Oh my gosh.
Of the dining room.
Oh my gosh.
And it made a hole about maybe 8 inches in diameter.
Okay.
And that never got fixed in all the time I was down there.
Oh, so, no.
You know, for a long time it got covered up with a sign or something. But for a long time it wasn't. And the reason we'd leave it open is because the ringtails would come during beer hall, would come down there and stick their head out and look.
Look at you guys.
Look at all the guests, you know, which was a big, you know, attraction for them to see a ringtail cat just, because they have these big eyes. And
well, they're very pretty.
Yeah, and staring at them, but, you know, I think they'd even feed them for all I know, you know.
Yeah. But you have coyotes down there too, probably, right?
Yes.
So, yeah. Did you ever see any kind of terrible killing of animals by other animals, or no?
No, but I'm sure there were some.
Because you had the bighorn sheep and coyotes and ringtails and deer. Yeah, probably they didn't do it too close to where people were living, right?
Right. And there were mountain lions, but, you know, those would have been deadly, but I don't remember.
Now, you had told me at one point Terry Soler she ended up marrying somebody from down there, right?
Right. Dan Tobin, so she's now Terry Tobin.
Terry Tobin.
Hey, Keith, you need to take your vitamins, Keith. I got your vitamins right here for you.
Okay, I'll just do it later.
Okay, I'm just reminding you, they're just right there.
Okay.
Did you guys want to order some lunch or do that a little later?
Let's do that later.
Okay.
I can wait until about 10 to 1 and then...
Okay.
And we'll have to do something.
Okay. Dan Tobin and Terry... T-E-R-R-Y, right?
Yes.
Solar. S-O-L-L-E-R or A-R?
S-O-L-L-E-R.
Or something.
I always spell it like solar energy, but I don't know.
Who knows? Who knows? But
you know how she spells her name, Nancy? No?
Solar energy.
Like solar energy.
Oh, so it's
S-O-L-A-R. Okay. And then they got married and they ended up living in Flagstaff, or?
Well, they, there was, well, that's a whole other story, because they were good friends with, who am I thinking of?
Us.
Good friends of you guys?
Of us, yeah, but... I'm thinking of, why can't I think of his name? You know, that ran Super Trash?
You mean Al White?
Not Al White. It was just here visiting.
Super Trash, I don't know who that is.
Bob Sutton?
There you go. Okay. They were good friends with these guys? Bob Sutton was?
Yeah, and Bob Sutton and Larry Powell had I may have this all not quite right, but one of the Movers and Shakers in Tucson, I can't remember who it was, but how did that work? Anyway, they I'm gonna have to think about that. Maybe I'll call them before I tell that story, because I don't know. I can't remember the details of it. So.
Okay. But they ran a business in Tucson?
Well, no. They did eventually. This Super Trash. It was the first trash company in Tucson.
Okay.
But somehow, anyway, they ended up becoming caretakers of the mine out on Maricopa Point. The what?
Uranium mine.
Yeah, the old uranium mine.
And who was the caretakers? Sutton and Powell, or Terry and her husband?
Well, first it was Sutton and Powell, and they were the ones that there were a few buildings, and they fixed it up so that it was a living space.
Okay.
And they had this, so they had this, the house was right on the edge of the canyon, so it was looking, it had these big picture windows looking out, you know, to the north, towards the,
okay,
to the north rim, and they had a wood-burning stove, and anyway, they got to be friends with those of us who were working and living down in the canyon, and so we would often stay there at night when we hiked out. We'd hike out and then take the shuttle out to Maricopa Point, and well, it was before the shuttle, but anyway, get out there somehow and stay there at night. I remember going up and watching the first episodes of Saturday Night Live.
Oh, back in the old days, in
back
the 70s.
In the old days.
Those were the good ones.
Yeah, when it was all the famous...
The original cast.
Original cast, yeah.
Eddie Murphy.
Uh-huh.
Yep, all of them.
Yeah, and we watched that until we passed out.
Okay, so Bob Sutton and Larry Powell,
yeah,
they first lived in that place or fixed
it
up?
Yeah, they first lived in it.
And then Dan Tobin and Terry Solar?
They kind of... Well, Bob got into the Super Trash thing in Tucson, so... he moved out, and so Dan and Terry moved in, and they lived there for quite a while, and we'd go see them.
And what were their jobs?
I don't remember why I'm telling this story, but...
Well, we were just talking about people you knew from that time, and you were telling me about Terry Soller dancing with somebody, but not Dan, and who kicked a hole in the wall when teaching her the polka or whatever it was.
Yeah, that was Brian.
Okay. And what was Terry's job?
And she was just like all of us.
Oh, so she's just down there working.
Yeah, it's, you know, the schedule kind of ran like this, you know. It was, you know, it had, like, down one side of it had everybody's name, and then there were, and then the top of it was the date, and for every day you were, you know, you had... a letter that represented what your job was that day. So it was just made so everybody changed jobs all the time.
Okay.
You didn't want to have to do the same job too often. And
Dan Tobin also worked in Phantom Ranch?
Yep.
And those two, you know them, and they're still married?
Yep.
Good. That's nice to know.
They are. Yeah, they're in Michigan right now. They both retired.
And they moved up there?
Yeah. They got other jobs after Phantom.
And ended up there.
Yeah.
And then Bob Sutton and Larry Powell, as far as you know, are they still in Arizona? Or
Bob is. I just saw him the other day. Yeah, he's still around. He's pretty. did you do that?
That was me and the dog. Yeah.
But no. Sutton is. He's been, you know, hanging around doing this and that and the other thing for
kind of
quite a while. I mean, the last thing I knew he did was he was driving the Cross Canyon shuttle. You know, the
right.
From the north to the south room.
Okay.
But, and Larry, I don't know about Larry. I've lost track of him. Last I knew, he was living in Flagstaff.
Okay, Larry Powell.
I haven't seen him for a long time.
I know a Larry Powers. Larry Powers, he's an archaeologist at the Forest Service, but he was not at the canyon.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so...
This guy was an artist.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he painted some really amazing pictures of the canyon. And in fact, for a long time, he was... selling them at the Mexican restaurant in Tucson.
Well, other people you said to follow up on. Okay, who was John Martini? Grizzly.
Grizzly. Well, he's this guy who has curly, long hair, and it's all... bunches up all the way around his head.
Okay.
And so that's why he's called Grizzly.
And he was there, Martinee or something? Or EY?
I don't know. I've always called him Grizzly. I've never called him by his name.
Okay, and Grizzly was down there at the same time as Terry and Dan and...
No, he was
different
there before
time.
Them.
Okay,
he
earlier.
He was there before them and before me, so I only heard stories about Grizzly. And, I mean, I knew Grizzly, but he told me a few stories. I mean, probably the one of the best ones, he was cooking, and they had a manager whose name I think was Stu Culbritz.
Okay.
And this Stu Culbritz was incredibly cheap. And whereas out front, of course, they were cooking steaks for everybody, for the employees, all we got was stuffed peppers. Stuffed peppers. And so... it was just stuffed peppers day after day after day.
Oh, my.
That's all the employees got. And, of course, I don't know if any of this is true or not. This is a story that was told me by Grizzly. So anyway, dinner time came, and Grizzly was the cook, and he... of course, you know, cooked up these stuffed peppers, you know, in kind of a casserole sort of thing. And
was it Martini or Culbritz that made the stuffed peppers? Was it Stu Culbritz?
No, Stu Culbritz was the manager.
Oh, he was the manager, but Martini was the cook.
Yeah.
Okay, got you.
Yeah, and so anyway, he made these stuffed peppers. I'm not sure. Maybe they weren't having to have them every day. But anyway, the cowboys, of course, are like, you know, anything. Even fish is a vegetarian meal.
Okay, got
you. You know, so the cowboys, they all sit down with us, with the employees. And Grizzly brought out these... stuffed peppers, and the closest cowboy, one of the, you know, at that time, I think they were hiring the cowboys from the state prison. They were all just really rough, kind of mean characters. Not all of them, but a lot of them were.
Were they big time drinkers too?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And anyway, this guy picks Grizzly up by the collar.
Ooh.
And throws him against the wall, holds him against the wall, and holds a knife to Grizzly's throat.
Oh my gosh.
And says to Stu, or maybe it was Stu.
Here.
Anyway, says to Stu, you're going to lose this employee if you don't give us steaks. And so Stu went, okay. So I might be being too nice to Stu. Maybe it was Stu that they picked up and held against the wall.
What are
but
the other?
Anyway,
they were pissed
one of them,
off.
And they said, you know, give us steaks or you're going to have a death on your hands. So that person, anyway, was like, yeah, okay. And so they got steaks that day. But ever since then, Grizzly, anytime that particular wrangler came down, he'd go grab his backpack and his sleeping bag and go sleep someplace else. You know, he wouldn't even stay at the ranch.
He would hide out. Basically.
Yeah, he's afraid of that wrangler. Yeah, there were stories about the wranglers finding a hippie on the trail and getting off their mules and grabbing the hippie and holding him down and shaving his head with a knife.
Oh man, that's mean.
Yeah.
That is mean. You know, if one of these things...
They said, the story goes, and the end of the story
okay,
is...
Okay, go ahead.
Is one guy was saying to the other guy, we shaved his head with a knife. And I said, you didn't use any kind of lubricant? And he said, well, yeah, a little bit of whiskey.
Oh, man. I can't believe they got away with doing that.
Oh, yeah, the cowboys were always carrying... You know,
nasty.
Booze down.
Oh.
Down to Phantom.
Well, they were probably happy to have these guys to do, you know, run the mules down there, people who knew what they were doing, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, you know, at one point, Terry ends up with a guy named Dan, right?
Uh-huh.
But who was Chris? Was there a Chris, too?
Chris,
do you remember
the
Chris?
The only Chris I remember was a guy. Yeah. Now he was there when I first got down to Phantom in 75. So, and he was about to quit. He ended up moving to the Northeast to, I don't know, not Massachusetts, but probably New Hampshire or someplace.
Okay.
And making guitars for a
oh,
living.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, but he was always a great guitar player anyway. And he was working at Phantom when I first started working down there. And, well, actually, he was working there before he even started working. I would come down... hike down and they'd invite me in for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And after dinner, I'd help them by drying dishes.
Okay.
And at the time, there was a three sink method of washing dishes. They didn't have a dishwasher.
Okay.
Or anything. So it had to be a high temperature. So we had to use these really thick gloves, rubber gloves, to do it. But the Chris would wash, throw all the dishes in a wash sink and three sink method. So he'd wash them and then he'd throw them in the second sink, which was just hot water. And I'd take them out of the second sink and put them in the third sink, which was water with, I think with bleach in it.
You want that in there?
To kill all the germs. And, but he'd put on one of those record players with the record players in the middle and these speakers kind of fold out.
Right.
And he'd put on bluegrass music, which made you, move really fast. Mm-hmm. So we could wash the dishes. It was only 40 plate settings, 44, but...
That's a lot.
60, I guess it would be. It
got you going, though. Got you moving.
Yeah, got us moving. And anyway, he was a lot. He liked to be in the lodge person, so that was what he did most of the time.
Okay, and then I know that you got to do river trips once Nancy got involved with Azra, because she had that as a perk probably of her job, doing trips down there. And before that, you had told me about one river trip that you took with Topping, I think.
Uh-huh.
And do you remember any other river trips from the late 70s, from 76, 7 to 79, 80? That you happened to get on? Or were they mainly Topping trips? Were they mostly private trips?
I got on, well, there was one, the first trip was an employee river trip.
Right.
And
you just had to pay some amount. It wasn't a whole very expensive thing, right?
No.
And it was it all employees or employees and other...
Well, it was all employees except for the staff of Moki Mac.
Okay.
Yeah, that was my introduction to the river. But Brad Jones was Brad Jones put together a river trip. He had a boat. And he put together a river trip with other people with boats, with Topping. I remember going down, that was another trip I went down. And that one flipped a few times.
Right, you were telling us that was some flipping. And yeah. They did manage to get you picked up, though.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Any other river trips you remember or memorable hikes? Before, in your lab, when you were down there full time?
Well, yeah, there was one time when I, Don Furr was another employee down there, and we had heard about that you could get up on top of Sumner Butte, which is this butte in the Redwall that's way up. We're kind of hanging over Phantom Ranch.
Okay.
And we'd heard about it, and then we read about it in Bouchard's book, Grand Canyon Hikes. We read about it and went, wow, let's go do that. And so we put the book down, put the book back on the shelf. And went, gaily off to, we weren't gay, but anyway, off to do that. Mm-hmm. And you go up the Clear Creek Trail. And remember I said, you get up, when you finally get up onto the Tonneau platform.
Right.
Then you're basically looking up at Sumner Butte, the front of Sumner Butte.
Okay.
And, or the front. Right side of it, and then, there's a canyon that stretches back that makes the east side of Sumner Butte. And that canyon stretches back to a place where you can actually see that wall and the next wall are close together, but you can see daylight between them.
Okay.
And we knew, and that's, you know, we knew that was the way you do it. So we got all our stuff together, something, food, and etc. And went to hike up there, and it was really a long ways up to where the break is, where you can see the break.
Okay.
But anyway, we finally got up there, and there's a break in the red wall, but the break is about maybe 100 feet above the ground level.
Oh, God.
So we're like, well, how do you get up there? And,
whoa.
And Don tried to do it with his back on one side of the crack and his feet on the other side. But
whoa.
That wasn't working. And so we finally gave up and went back and went, well, next time we need to take the book. It probably
taught you. Whoa, that's scary, really.
Yeah. But anyway, so we came back the next time. I know it was probably a while later, it was a while later because it was Don on that trip. No, Don was leaving on that trip. So anyway, I went this time. It was with Terry Soler and Terry Mache, and Bill Boucher, or Bill Burns.
Okay.
And me, you know. So we're all Phantom Ranchers, and we took the book with us. So when we finally got up to the bottom of that crack, which is no easy feat itself, it's a lot further up there than it looks from the Clear Creek Trail. Anyway, we finally got to that, and what you have to do is walk about maybe 30 yards to the right along the cliff, and there's a ledge that's only about maybe 2 feet wide,
mm-hmm.
but it slants up to the crack, mm-hmm. up to where the crack is. So we got on that and walked up that, climbed up that, and it doesn't take long before things are starting to get to where it's a long ways down on the left, so mm-hmm. you definitely don't want to make a mistake. Anyway, it finally gets up to this bowl that's maybe at least maybe 70 feet or so above the ground down below,
mm-hmm.
And you've got to climb down off of this ledge you've been walking on. You've got to climb down the rocks that are, your rock ledges that are sticking out, which are only, you know, about two
right.
inches wide.
Right.
And down to this bowl. And if you slip on the bowl is all this slick rock,
oh, uh-huh.
that's going like this to this hole in the middle of it,
oh, Lord.
Which is the top of the waterfall.
Okay.
It's formed by that break anyway. So so you had to be really careful there.
And it's not like you guys were, you know, mountaineering you know, super experienced mountaineers. You were employees who just got a wild hair and decided to do this, right?
Right.
And you didn't take ropes or anything with you?
No. So anyway, you get down, you know, and carefully walk around the bowl so you don't slip toward the hole in the middle. And then on the other side, you had to climb back up about 4 or 5 feet of rock to another ledge, and then walk around that toward the back of the bowl. And there was a big rock pillar sort of thing that you had to throw your foot around that to the ledge on the other side that you couldn't see from this side.
Wow, that's scary.
You had to throw your foot around that to get to that. And then once you got there, then you were in the back of the bowl where there was a kind of a dirt rock way up, you know, what would you call it? Anyway, almost a trail, yeah, that goes on up to the, and then you're on what they call the Esplanade, which is on top of the Red Wall, but on top of Summer Butte, too, Summer Butte. Now you've got, to your right, you've got Zoroaster Temple and Brahma Temple that are relatively close, you know. And then on your left, you've got Summer Butte. So anyway, you walk around that. That's an easy walk over to there. And then you get to the top to the level that's at the top of Sumner Butte, and then if you walk on out that toward the end of Sumner Butte, then the two sides get thinner and closer and closer and closer together the further out you go.
Okay.
Until they're only maybe 3 feet wide. You're on a ledge of 3 feet wide, and then it comes to a place where that ends, and it drops like probably 6 feet down.
Wow. Okay.
And then there you have to. So what you had to do is step down this. Oh, and this is all kind of rotten rock, because it's all very exposed to the weather and stuff. So the rock layers aren't cemented together. You know, they're all the rocks are all kind of
right.
Rock
crumbling
on top of crumbling on top of each other. So anyway, you had to go down that for 6 feet, holding on to just the wall, the rock wall. And then you had to step backwards about across this abyss.
Oh, that, God.
That right. was, I don't know, it was, you know, and realize that on either side of the abyss, it is blue, you know, it's so far down, it's like a blue, purplish color, you know.
Wow.
It's so far
That's
down.
So scary.
It's at least 1,000 feet off either side of that. Well, anyway, you had to go down that and then step backwards across that abyss onto this pedestal.
Oh my God.
And then from there you could turn around and walk out to the end of Sumner Butte. Well,
if you don't die, you have quite a view.
Exactly. Exactly, and that's exactly what was going through my mind and Terry's mind,
yeah.
Terry Solar.
Thinking, what am
like
I doing
going,
here?
We're like going, I want, you know, I've still got a life to live.
I don't want to
die here.
Right.
And this is just too much for us. So we did not do it, Terry and I, but Terry Mache, who is dead now, but she didn't die there. And Bill,
Bill Burns.
Bill Burns.
They did it?
They went on out to the end of Sumner Butte.
And Terry...
I said, what was that like? And they're like, oh, it was okay.
Yeah, like no big deal.
Like, okay. Well, the place we ended up with, you know, Terry and I... So Terry and I just sat down, you know, looking to the west. And we're looking down on the North Kaibab, or where the North Kaibab, oh, we can't really see it. It's over the edges of cliffs. But anyway, we're looking at that, and that's going off this way. And off in this direction, you can see where Ribbon Falls is, and most importantly, the North Rim. You could see that. And then looking straight across, you're looking up Phantom Creek, and the end of Phantom Creek is, these big temples and things that are, I mean, it's just a beautiful place, an amazing place.
So you had a great view. Yeah, you didn't have to really go any further.
Yeah, so it was, I mean, for us, it was enough.
It was enough.
Yeah.
So whatever happened to Terry Mache? Do you know how she died?
Yeah, she was... she went... And this was quite a while later after she left Phantom, but she was scuba diving off the coast of... Mexico.
Oh.
Yeah, off the coast of Mexico, and they it was an easy dive apparently, but apparently they were under looking at a turtle or something like that. Huh?
She came up.
Too fast?
No. And she was hanging on the rope.
Oh.
Yeah, they came up and she was on the surface with others, and they were holding onto the rope, waiting in turn to get pulled back up onto the boat.
Okay.
And she just let go and sank below the water level.
Huh. Wonder what happened.
And nobody knows, you know, does she have a heart attack or
who knows?
What?
She wasn't very old, though, probably.
She'd be in her 50s, probably, at that point.
50s or early 60s, you think?
I wouldn't say 60s yet.
Well, and not married? She was she gay, did you say?
She's gay, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
She had a girlfriend.
She had a girlfriend?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, and Bill Burns, do you know anything that ever happened to him?
He ended up going back to Oregon. He was from Oregon. He's part of the Burns family, which were quite a part of that period, too, because there was... Cindy Burns, who was the assistant manager for a while under Terry, and Bill Burns, who was her brother, of course, and then there was another Burns who worked there later, and then Cindy has been, you know, worked for the Park Service for a while on the river.
Okay.
And anyway, they're pretty, one of my favorite memories of Cindy was at one of our parties here in Parks. We had a hula hoop, and she made the hula hoop and gave it to us. And she was doing the hula hoop around her waist, and in one hand she was holding a beer, and in the other hand she was holding a joint.
And she was hula hooping.
And she was hula hooping.
She was a wild child.
She was amazing.
And so these Burnses were from Oregon originally.
Yeah, from Portland.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me just see what time it is since I have no clue. 12:41. 11 to 12. Okay, and you wanted to eat at about 12:50, right?
Well, we have to be there by.
You have to get in there.
1:15, actually.
Okay.
12:50, we could probably get there in time.
Okay, so we're going to do 10 more minutes?
Okay.
Okay. So, the pills. His pills?
No. There's a box that just has books.
There's a box that has what again?
Books.
Books? Your books?
Yes.
Yeah, I think I have your books because I've been keeping your letters so that I can start in 1995 with your.
Oh, you have the letters?
I have your letters.
Oh, good.
Yes, I have been referring to them, and I in fact referred to them before I came today, but we didn't jump ahead that far, so that's okay.
So, do you have a stocking in the wild
dragon? The which one?
Stocking in the wild dragon.
Yes, I do.
Okay, there's a ringtail cat.
Oh, ringtail cat one?
Yes.
Okay, I'll read it. I'll read it. I think I'm as far as, I know I've gotten through the coyotes, the sheep, the deer, the elk, but I've not gotten to the ringtail cat yet. I'll read that one. So, anyways, let's see. And these Burnses, as far as you know, are back in Oregon.
Yeah.
No.
Well, oh, that's right. Cindy lives in Terlingua,
which is down in Costa Rica.
No, it's right on the. It's a border town for Big Bend.
Oh, I know that town.
Yeah.
Okay. She lives there?
Yeah.
And that's become kind of like a resort almost. It's kind of a rough little town, but right before you get into that town, they've now got golf courses. I don't know when you were there last, but there's golf courses.
It's been a while.
Yeah. Terlingua. And I was just there in April.
Oh, I'll be darned.
My husband and I did. We never had been to Big Bend, and we went to Big Bend, which is so beautiful.
Did you do the river at all?
No, we didn't do it. No, we should have. We should have. We had our dippy dog with us, so we couldn't do it. I think if we went again, I think you can arrange for your dog to go to a kennel or something so you can do the river
at the doggy hotel.
There is probably a doggy hotel. And we did come down through the state park. It's called Big Bend Ranch State Park. And that's right along the river. And that's beautiful.
Oh,
beautiful. And then came into Terlingua from that side and then went back up through Big Bend the next day. It was nice. Very nice.
Oh,
good. Hot. Very hot, even in April. You know?
Yeah.
Still pretty hot. So yeah, is Cindy Burns lives there, what does she do? Do you know?
She does a whole bunch of things, but probably the most the most she does is as a cook guide for for hunting parties.
Okay.
And that would be, though, more like along the Rio Grande, you know,
right.
On up further north.
Right. It looks like there'd be all kinds of wild animals around there.
Oh,
those
yeah.
Those mountains and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so anyway, that's what she does. And she's married, you know, her husband runs the river.
Okay.
And she helps with that, too.
Okay. Her husband runs the river. Okay.
This is the Rio Grande. Or, yeah, the Rio Grande.
Yeah, beautiful yeah. down there.
Yeah.
And oh, you know what? It's very lightly visited, too.
I know. I know. I spent a month there with Terry. Well, actually, with Terry Tobin and Dan Tobin and Grizzly.
Okay. You guys were just visiting?
No, we went down the river.
Cool.
We started... boy, I can't remember the names of these towns. El Prison or something. El.
Huh. I know I can look on a map.
Anyway.
And when did you do this?
Oh my God.
Was it still in the 70s?
That would have been. No, it really wasn't the 70s, but it could have been in the 90s.
Okay.
I guess.
I'll look and see if. Because her. Her letters started around 95. The holiday letters. I'll see if it's mentioned in any of those. Thank goodness for the holiday letter.
Yeah, really.
I wish she'd started them earlier.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay, so we better... I think we should stop it here, because we've been going for over an hour and a half. I'm going to hit stop.